Tell your smartphone to smarten up. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. On demand. This is Brady and Walker. Watch it on Sportsnet 360. Hear it on sportsnet.ca/590. And Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Good afternoon. It is Brady and Walker, our 2 o'clock hour, at Brady and Walker on Twitter. So there is not much more I hate in the sports world than overreaction. We talk about it all the time. Putting the cart ahead of the horse, so to speak. Getting ahead of yourself, especially kids in baseball. There's 162 games. There's 6 months. There's ups. There's downs. There's streaks. There's slumps. So I am at the risk of doing that right now, but I'll tell you why. 15 games as a sample size is virtually nothing. It's less than 10% of the season. Yet, I'm having a real hard time right now thinking the Blue Jays haven't struck absolute gold with second baseman Devin Travis. Okay, these other rookies, Sanchez and Norris and Pompey, they all have some things to like about them, for sure. But it is still wait-and-see mode. Devin Travis, though, this kid, there is something about him. Better defensively than we thought. 3 more hits last night, including the game-winning home run. Bat him ninth, he's been good. Bat him leadoff, he's been great. Bat him second, he's been good. You can't get overly caught up in the raw numbers. I admit he's not going to hit 20 home runs. He's not going to hit .388. But two things stand out to me, Greg. He takes everything the other way. We've seen home runs and doubles opposite field, and he's patient. He sees pitches. He doesn't offer it borderline strikes. To me, this makes it really difficult for the rest of the league to adjust to this guy. Who knew that second base was going to be the least of the Blue Jays' worries in 2015?
This is Brady and Walker. Watch it on Sportsnet 360. Hear it on sportsnet.ca/590. And Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Brady and Walker, how are you? 2 o'clock hour on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and nationwide on Sportsnet 360. By the way, you can always catch our podcast on iTunes. Do a search on Brady and Walker. Sometimes climbing the charts, sometimes stagnant, sometimes falling behind.
It'll be right up there, just behind Bill Simmons.
Sometimes falling behind fishing and hunting podcasts. It really fluctuates. Yeah. That's what our staff tells us anyway.
Bass player monthly podcast, yeah.
So it's Chris Tillman, Drew Hutchinson tonight, and yeah, Devin Travis will be front and center. I thought about that, and I'm glad you said that.
Like, I don't want to get ahead of myself, right?
Nobody does.
We're smart people. Baseball fans are smart people.
You know how it is, and it happens a lot in this city with the Maple Leafs. Like, you see a guy for a couple games, and he can really impress, and it just is fool's gold. It's either a late season call up, and you go, that guy would fit in really nicely here. I know that people said that about Matt Fratton the first time or two they saw him, or Joel Colburn because he was a former first-round pick.
Sure.
I'm trying to think if this is the most excited Blue Jays fans, and you can let us know on Twitter, at Brady and Walker. We're going to switch things to the NBA in a few minutes, and Stu Jackson's coming up, by the way, at 2:15. We love talking to Stu Jackson about the games last night and about the Raps tomorrow. Is this the most excited anybody's been since Travis Snyder? And I say that because Travis Snyder
for a position player.
Snyder felt like a prospect for a long time. And if you'd have said to me when was his first run of having more than 250 at-bats, it wasn't until 2010. And it felt like he was around a lot. He came up as a 20-year-old, and the team wasn't very good, and interest was lower, et cetera, et cetera. And he didn't there were things he did that always looked promising. And a lot of times also it is where a guy gets taken in the draft, and he was a first-round pick. Wouldn't you say half the excitement of Colby Rasmus being here was knowing that he was thought so highly of by a very good baseball organization in St. Louis?
He was an uber prospect, but so was Edwin Encarnacion.
And
then he went to irrelevant to eventual superstar. Anybody can have a good month. Anybody can. Right? We've seen, Ryan Goins came up at the end of the season 2 years ago and hit in his first 9 games. And we thought maybe this guy had a bit of a stick.
Sometimes it clicks. Like, I would even think about a guy like Jeff Kent, who they had to trade for David Cone, had to trade to make a run. It was still the right thing to do. And you know, maybe the Blue Jay, the diehard Blue Jay fan just kind of crossed fingers and said, gee, I hope Kent's not as great as I think he is, but he was great. He was awesome.
Yeah, borderline Hall of Fame career, yeah.
You know, Tigers fans would remember trading John Smoltz straight up for Doyle Alexander. Well, they won the division that year, and then John Smoltz had 20 amazing years. I think it's the biggest. We've gotten excited about a young player, position player, since Travis Snyder, and you're seeing things already, not to denigrate Travis Snyder, but I brought him up as a comparison point. Travis Snyder saw a lot of AAA pitching. This guy's never played AAA. He's never played. He's never faced AAA pitching. He's in Erie with the Seawolves last year. And even Barry Davis said to him on the broadcast last night, have you been faking everybody out with the fact you're not a power hitter? Because he had 10 home runs in AA in right. four in 400 at-bats. He has four, and we're not done April yet.
Now, that's the thing where you can't get ahead of yourself. I don't know if Devin Travis is going to finish the season with more than 10 or 15 home runs.
Yeah.
And again,
doesn't have to.
Anybody can have a good month. Right? Like last year in May, and I don't blame fans for talking this way because the Blue Jays were unbelievable in May, and there's Juan Francisco hitting in the sixth hole, hitting home run after home run, getting protected in the lineup, and because Jose Bautista came out of nowhere, because Edwin Encarnacion came out of nowhere. I remember asking Alex Anthopoulos this when we did the morning show, do you let yourself dream about hitting another one out of the park? And to his credit, he was like, well, let's just slow down a second. And sure enough, Juan Francisco couldn't hit for the rest of the year. So anybody can have a good month. But it's the things I said before. There's just, and maybe this is bad reasoning, there's just something about this kid, about taking everything the other way and not swinging wildly at borderline pitches. Like if you go once around the league, and teams and pros and pitchers and coaching staffs are going to adjust to you. When you take it to every part of the field, how do you adjust?
Yeah.
How do you get them out? It's more difficult.
Now, people are reminding me on Twitter, and maybe I'm the one with the short memory here, but I'll clarify the sudden excitement over it because people were excited when the team did trade for Brett Laurie in the Sean Markham deal. You're giving away an established pitcher, one of their best. That was the Roy Halladay year with Roy Halladay leaving and being traded. Markham would have come back and expected to be one of the best three pitchers in the rotation. There's no question about that.
That was kind of still a good trade, but actually.
Yeah, it was, absolutely. Yeah. And now you flipped him for a package against Josh Donaldson, so no one will complain. I don't care what Donaldson does. That's the trade you make 20 times out of 20. This isn't even, like you and I can spit fire at each other about the R.A. Dickey trade. We're not going to do that about the Josh Donaldson trade. You do it 20 times out of 20. Laurie, you were worried about right away when they got him. There was a report 2 or 3 days into the period where he's traded. He was playing for Huntsville in AA with the Brewers chain, and people were like already worried about he's gotten hurt a little bit before, and he put dumb stuff on his Facebook page. He's having social media issues. Doy.
Yeah, like, but then he came up at Camden Yards in Baltimore and had an insane first couple of months.
I know.
Right?
And we extrapolated these numbers out, and I did it too. So he comes up as a 21-year-old in 2011, hits 9 home runs and 150 at-bats, and dumb guys like me go, maybe he'll hit 27.
Hey,
but it was never going to happen.
Of course, there's always the chance that it's going to be fool's gold. It's baseball. It happens all the time. Maybe even, like, I'm trying to remember position players. You remember when the Blue Jays got Jose Cruz Jr., hit 6 home runs in his first 6 games or something like that? Guy was
excitement.
That guy was going to be a Hall of Fame kind of guy.
But he was very solid.
And he did have a good career.
I think
obviously
I'm going to say Shannon Stewart was a top 20 pick, and I think he became exactly what you'd hope a top 20 pick would become. I think he was fine for a lot of years.
He finished 5th in MVP voting.
Totally.
Great career.
John Olerud was exactly what you hoped he would be. Yeah, like I had a lot of skepticism. I this is a real whiff on my part. I remember being really skeptical that Olerud was going to step in on a really good veteran team and be able to contribute, because at times that's where you're dumb and you're judging body language. Because I'm looking at Olerud going, well, he doesn't look cocky.
He's kind of dopey, yeah.
And he's got the helmet in the field. he doesn't say much. But so Devin Travis looks like he's 5'9". He's got kind of a big butt, and he's 5'9". I don't care. None of that matters. None of that means anything to play Major League second
base.
That's
what I've been telling people for 30-some years.
So, and obviously, Vernon Wells was. You don't have to remember everything about Vernon Wells fondly, but He was a fifth overall pick, and he was exactly what he was supposed to be. You absolutely hit a triple 20 when you drafted Vernon Wells. You did.
I'm being a bit of a hypocrite because I tell people all the time to slow down with both their good and their bad. I have a tough time. Like, I might be the idiot that has a Devin Travis jersey. And 8 months from now, Devin Travis is playing double A. Like, I might be that guy.
Because you know me, like
I've never been more like, it's 15 games and I'm not that guy. I'm not an idiot, but 15 games and he looks the
part. But take the guy we talked about who he was traded for. And because he was part of the Halliday deal, we all looked at Anthony Gost and we're hopeful and we can rave about his defense and, but he wasn't even, I didn't even find him that astute a stolen base guy. And obviously he wasn't getting on a ton to steal bases. So that factored in. He wasn't good at drawing walks. He was swinging at pitches at his ankles.
I know Anthony Gost had a great start in Detroit. Great start in Detroit. But you still wouldn't trade Dalton Pompey for him. Like, you wouldn't do over.
No, this was the right thing to do. So speaking of how we evaluate Toronto players, basketball tomorrow, game 3 tomorrow night. We have game 4, by the way, on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, 6:30 on Sunday. Raptors-Wizards. Obviously, it brings the city back. The city, if the city is sitting out, like on the bench right now with a towel around its neck, basically saying, show me you can win and then I'm back. Well, we're all going to watch tomorrow from the opening tip till it's over, unless they're down by 15 in the fourth quarter. But the emotional investment returns with a victory in game 3 tomorrow night.
Absolutely.
I think we also agree that the emotional investment can only be returned if Kyle Lowry is Kyle Lowry again. And what we could kick around, we'll do this with Stu Jackson in about 5 minutes, is how much of what's happened in this series is Kyle Lowry not being himself. Now he's got a shin contusion. It's good that they've had the extra day off instead of being right back out there in playing 2 games in 3 days. But did any of us over-evaluate Kyle Lowry? He was playing fantastic basketball when DeMar DeRozan got hurt.
He was a starter at the All-Star game.
And he was popular. But going off to a 24-7 record, probably more than any other Raptor, we elevated him and said, we've got him where a lot of it. Take a few point guards out of the West. Let's get the big three out of the way right away and Curry, Paul, and Westbrook.
Sure.
No, we're not talking about that. But we had conversations. We're like, who's having a better year, him or Damian Lillard? Him and John Wall. Yes, him and Kyrie Irving at different times. Him and Brandon Jennings.
Jeff Teague, yeah.
Yeah, so we kicked that around. Does this team look at Kyle Lowry and say, because I'm at the point where he's back and he's the core and they just signed him. Kyle Lowry, though, may need a player better than him. I weirdly would call this, unfortunately, the Kessel argument, where you go, if Kyle Lowry's your best player, you got a pretty nice team. If you want to make the NBA Finals or probably even the Eastern Conference, Kyle Lowry cannot be your very best player on your basketball team. And maybe he and DeRozan can't be 1-2, whichever one you like better. They need to be the second and third best basketball players on your team if you want to go where you want to go.
DeRozan's their best player. Kyle Lowry's their heart and soul.
Here's
where I'll put myself in the category of the guys that were maybe a little quick or a little wrong. Like, I remember early in the season, so they're 24-7, And Lowry's going to the All-Star game, and you know, listen, you're the guy that's wrong about a lot, and I'll call you whenever you're wrong. But I think you were on Twitter, or we talked about it on the show or something, and you were kind of saying, hey, you know, I'd prefer Conley or I'd prefer Kemba Walker, and I lost it on you, and I just chalked it up to,
I'm being honest, I would never say Kemba Walker, but I probably said Jeff Teague is having as good a season as he is right now, and Conley now, is as good as Kyle Lowry.
And I went overboard because the argument here was not who's more talented, because you don't have to watch very much basketball to figure out that Damian Lillard or John Wall have more physical gifts than Kyle Lowry, obviously. But at the time, I was the one that said, would I trade, knowing what this Raptors team is and how they play and how they operate, would I trade Kyle Lowry for a guy like John Wall? I don't know if I would. In fact, I wouldn't, because Kyle Lowry is the identity of this team. Sure, a player can be better than another player or have more physical gifts, but when the Raptors are playing their best, it's because Kyle Lowry wills them to play well. Now, looking back on it, yes, you were right. And right now, I mean, the way this thing has gone and the way Kyle Lowry has, and I don't know how banged up he is. He's still the heart and soul on their team, but we haven't seen that heart and soul element in a long time. And I don't know what to attribute that to. And now, I mean, John Wall's taking his lunch money.
I worry. And with
Mike
Wall,
Conley was terrific last night.
Yeah,
and they're in
great.
The same series, right?
I worry that some folks look at, like, there's natural ability and basketball acumen. And they're just two very different things. I don't think you have to be a brilliant. I think you can get by with physical gifts if you're Rob Gronkowski, you can get by with physical gifts. You can get by with physical gifts if you're a baseball player that's not a catcher. I think your point guard just has to be your smartest guy. And I think Kyle Lowry is pretty smart.
He is smart.
There have been plenty of guards. I'd say point guard or even shooting guard. Like, you wouldn't look at Joe Dumars and say, well, there's the most gifted basketball player I've ever seen.
He's not dunking over you.
No, but he's downright brilliant. There have been players that have played here.
Mark Jackson.
Damon Stoudemire.
Hey, John Stockton, let's be honest.
John Stockton. I got to watch those Sacramento teams early in the century a lot in person. Every time they'd come when I was in Detroit, I'd go see them. And you're
Mike,
looking.
Mike Bibby.
My God, yeah. Starting lineup. And you'd bring Jason Williams off the bench, and I'd go, Jason Williams may have more physical gifts than Mike Bibby. You know who's a smarter basketball player? Mike Bibby is not even close.
Well, there was
a smarter guy, period.
There was a time earlier this year where if you told me, I don't think Kyle Lowry's a top 10 point guard in the league, I might have punched you. And now, I mean, it's a market.
League of the East is two different things.
It's a market correction now, because you look in the East and I'm thinking, yeah, like now I'll have the conversation about Mike Conley or Eric Bledsoe, or yes, Kemba Walker, or even, who's the guy Miami got from Phoenix late in the season?
I'm blacking. Well, not...
Yeah, Dragic.
Brandon Knight got traded, but Dragic is who you're thinking of.
Him, like, and I don't know if I'm going too far the other way, and I'm not down on Kyle Lowry. I just so badly, and fans so badly want to see Kyle Lowry show that heart and soul and be the leader of this team in Game 3.
I think it's a real golden era, though, and that's the way the league's trending, where I think, like, where NFL quarterbacks were about 5 years ago, where you got about 10 excellent ones, and you know who they are, and they're the same 10 guys every season, and if you don't have the 10, you might squeeze into the playoffs, but you're not winning when you get there. That's how I feel like we're headed that way with point guards if we're not there already. Stu Jackson would have something to say about that, former NBA exec and coach, and, of course, current NBA TV analyst. Stu, great to have you on this morning. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing well. Hey, thanks for having me again, guys.
Happy to. We love hearing from you. Your analysis of sort of where we are in a league with point guards. We were talking about big men earlier, and we're not in the same era. It feels like it's just Dwight Howard. Nobody's playing back to the basketball anymore. Your big men better be able to shoot. They better be able to run. There aren't Sean Bradleys in the league anymore. But the point guard position is, you may have out of your best 30 players in the NBA, 8 or 10 of them might be point guards. That's how important the position is. And the Bulls used to win without a point guard, and you can't do it anymore.
Yeah, no, it's really difficult, particularly, you know, the way that the rules have been changed in the past decade and a half, and the fact that the, you know, officiating emphasis is now on not being able to hold players on the perimeter or hand check them or body check them, having someone that has the ability to now get into the lane and collapse opposing defenses and as well shoot the ball from the perimeter to make defenses press out on the perimeter is really important. And it's really, because of those rules and interpretations, has really opened up the game, particularly in the middle of the floor, and really put even more pressure and a need, dare I say, on having players that are able to do that, especially the point guard.
When you're watching this Raptors-Wizards series, there's been a lot of surprising elements to it, and one of them is just John Wall's taken it over, especially in Game 2, and we keep waiting for Kyle Lowry to be the guy we saw earlier this season. Are you convinced they're overmatched, or are you convinced that Kyle Lowry just isn't physically right? What are you seeing?
Well, listen, in no disparaging Kyle Lowry, John Wall is a tough matchup for anybody, any point guard in this league, because of his size, because of his athletic ability, and the fact that I think through his maturation, he has really learned to run a basketball team, and particularly the tempo of the game. And even though you look at the fact in game two, he took the basketball game over, you know, for all intents and purposes in game one, he wasn't very good for most of that game, but then late in the game in the overtime, he took it over again, and he has that ability, and I thought was a big factor in the reason why the Wizards are up 2-0.
What this Rondo situation in Dallas, I'm fascinated to get your perspective. You've signed players, you've cut players, you've coached players in this league. I feel like of 30 coaches, I feel like I weirdly know Rick Carlisle the best. I spent time with his teams. I traveled on the road with him. I know he can be a prickly guy, but players have loved playing for him. Why has this not even come close to working? I'd have to blame it all on the player. They both have a resume and they both have a championship ring, but the player hasn't acquiesced and fit in with his new team.
Well, like most situations, I don't think in this case the player corners the market on, you know, the ill feelings and bad behavior. I felt this way, and I said this on NBA TV back when they made the trade for Rondo, that the Dallas Mavericks' two biggest needs at the time in an effort to try to vault their team, you know, into a higher seed in the playoffs and perhaps have a championship-type run were contingent on two things. That is improving their defense and improving their rebounding. And with the acquisition of Rajon Rondo, they did neither. Okay, and I didn't understand the move. I mean, you factor into that Rondo has had a history of, you know, being a little bit uncertain, you know, emotionally and being difficult to deal with back in his Boston days, and his ability to integrate into the team. He wasn't very good at it. And if not for the leadership of Pierce, Garnett, and Ray Allen, certainly you might have seen the same thing with the Boston Celtics then. So I didn't like the move then. I didn't like it afterwards. And all that's coming to fruition right now, I think, is a poor decision by the Mavericks to acquire him. And certainly what they got Rondo, they knew what they were getting, and now you see the result of it.
San Antonio, L.A., from what we've seen, sets up to be probably the best first-round series, the one with the bigger chance to go deep. We'll see what the Raptors have up their sleeve in Game 3. What are you seeing from the Spurs and for the Clippers? The San Antonio is going to be a nightmare matchup for whoever. Is it an okay one for the Clippers?
Yeah. With the Clippers, what I do see is this. I see a Clipper basketball team that has much more of a sense of urgency, is playing together as a unit much better than they were last playoff season, and they're making a real effort to cut down on late game execution and turnover mistakes. They're making that effort. So if I'm the Spurs, I'm a little bit concerned because they really have their ears perked. And on top of that, you know, the Clippers really pose a really bad matchup for the Spurs. They have no one that can guard Blake Griffin. And even the Defensive Player of the Year, Kawhi Leonard, doesn't stand a chance physically against somebody like Griffin. And I think throughout this series, he's going to have success. What I worry about is, you know, the Clippers' ability to sustain that effort, the energy, and the execution, which they just have not shown. And I do not like their bench. I think their bench is very weak. And if you factor that, even though last night I think the scoring on the bench was even, but in game one, I think it was 43-22 in favor of the Spurs. And you knew last night the Spurs starters weren't going to play as poorly as they did in game one. And sure enough, you get a great ball game. And, you know, at the end of the game, the Clippers don't execute. You had the key turnover by, you know, Blake Griffith. You know, the Spurs, on the other hand, continue their flawless offensive play, and they win the game in overtime. It's going to be a hell of a series, but I think at the end of the day, the bench is going to be a telltale sign and the detriment of the Los Angeles Clippers.
NBA TV's Stu Jackson, our guest. We got about 90 seconds. Can I sell you on the Bulls competing with the Cavs in the next round, that it's going so well? Milwaukee's a great matchup for them. Jimmy Butler's exploiting guys all over the place, but can I convince you Chicago? They haven't had to get on an airplane. That's great. That's a big deal in the first round, is avoiding travel, minimizing your games. If they get through quickly, can they give Cleveland something to think about in the second round?
There's no question that they can. The Bulls, particularly if Derrick Rose is healthy, I mean, through the first couple games, they have been absolutely terrific. I mean, what if I told you that they're leading all playoff teams right now in assists per game? What if I told you that, you know, their three-point shooting, has been terrific so far, and they're not, you know, even without Mirotić right now. And defensively right now, Chicago is second among all teams in the playoffs defensively for a team that didn't play as well defensively during the regular season. So to answer to your question, it's an easy sell. They're deep, great front court. They have a star in Derrick Rose who seems to be playing at a high level. They have good perimeter shooting. And if defensively they're playing the way they're capable, they are more than capable of giving Cleveland a run for their money. Jimmy Butler, terrific defender, not going to stop LeBron, but certainly he'll make him earn it, and that's all you can do. And the fact that Cleveland hasn't been there and had that adversity through a playoff run the way the Bulls have historically over the past few years, I give the Bulls a great chance to win the series.
Chicago Milwaukee's on NBA TV tonight. I'm so relieved because we're so stressed the Raptors are going out. We want to, if it happens, we got to have a great series next round in the East. This is not, there's no drama right now.
I feel your pain, trust me. But you know, you may have run into a buzzsaw in the Wizards here.
Well, and I'd love to see Washington give Atlanta a go, and I'm not sure they can't if they get done and cooled early. That could be also a more fun second round than we'd expect. We got a blast too. We'll definitely talk really soon. Love your work. Thanks for this.
Yeah, hey, thank you guys.
Really smart stuff from Stu Jackson. Well, you can follow him on Twitter at StuJackson32. I highly recommend it.
Then you have guys like me guaranteeing a first round series win.
You didn't guarantee it per se. You just said they were a better team.
No, I guarantee
that's not a guarantee.
I yelled at everyone to start acting like a favorite and grow some balls.
I know you did.
And get out there and quit playing the underdog
role. But then
role.
Grievous Vasquez started talking about Paul Pierce's balls, and everything went weird after that. And then he begged people, stop asking me about Paul Pierce. But then he talked about him for a minute and a half.
So speaking of...
By the way, did you see Drake gave Paul Pierce like a little fist bump on the way off the court in game two? Did you see that?
Yes, of course I saw it.
What do you think about that?
I don't care.
I'm pretending to be really outraged about it.
Are you really mad?
Yeah, I really am.
Mad about the global ambassador?
I can whip up some solid fake outrage about the global ambassador.
I don't care.
Even though I have all his 45s and 33s.
I don't care what Drake does. If he eventually plays a role in the Toronto Raptors being in the conversation for a guy like Kevin Durant, then I'll put up with anything. Anything that he's going to do or not do. I'll put up with the live DJ, all that kind of stuff.
You were telling me you'd rather Dallas Drake was the global ambassador of the Leafs, of the Raptors than the
other way around. Yeah, that's kind of where I go. So, speaking of Twitter.
Yeah, Stu Jackson, 32. That's right.
Don't block him.
Don't unfavorite him. Okay.
Now, when social media is certainly a part of our show, generally the part where people say how much they hate the show. I look at your Twitter account, at BradyFan590 and at my Twitter account at Fan590Walker. And by all means, weigh in at Brady Walker's Twitter account as well.
Just to Andrew's account.
Now,
really,
you have about, I always felt a little insecure because you have about double the Twitter followers that I do.
Yeah, but you've done a strong demographic search of who those people are. You care about my followers.
And they're all in England.
They're not all in England. Now you're making me angry.
A good portion of them are from England.
We'll get the official stats. I'm also very big in West Africa. I've had some very... They had that big soccer championship, and I weighed in on Algeria.
You tweet a lot
Ghana.
Of inane stuff about soccer, and soccer people tend to like
you. It's the biggest sport in the world, so that helps me. If you did more soccer tweets, you'd increase your followers. Let's make it happen.
It's not worth it.
Who do you like in the Europa League today?
I don't even know what that is.
Fine.
So, but the one thing... So you make me feel a little insecure there. But the one part I have you on, I have that little blue check mark, which just makes everything feel nice. I have a verified Twitter account I have for about a year. You have you have double my followers, mostly in London, England, and you are not verified. But today we had a conversation with someone from Sportsnet.
That's Erica.
Yes.
Okay.
Nobody knows who that is.
Trying to promote Erica. And I don't mean physically, like move her up to a level, but...
And they basically asked you if they can take the necessary steps with Twitter to get you verified. So it's the end of an era where my Twitter account trumps yours.
You know what? We're not going to say who the on-air personality was. One on-air personality...
refuses.
is refusing, and he's active on Twitter. This isn't one of these accounts where it's somebody that you can tell a gun got put to their head and they were held hostage, and they made a video of him being held hostage to get him onto Twitter.
So there's
That's not like that.
There's a certain Sportsnet television personality.
Stop talking about James Cebulski like
that.
No, it's not him.
That refuses to get verified checkmark. Who doesn't want a blue verified checkmark?
When did you go about? Now, first of all,
I didn't do anything. I just woke up one day to a blue checkmark.
That's not true. That's absolutely impossible.
No, it's not.
You have to ask to get verified.
Yeah, no, but Sportsnet asked on my behalf.
And you just said yes? You don't...
I didn't say yes. I just... They told me...
ignored.
They told me that they were doing it, and I said, okay, and I woke up one day, and there it was.
Here's the only thing I'm skeptical of is, will the blue checkmark, if I do something wrong on Twitter, benefit me or hurt me? If I say the wrong thing, if I snap...
I don't think it makes a difference.
If I snap and go, oh yeah, why don't you get a radio show?
You say that anyway.
You know the
one thing, I don't even want to say this, the one thing I've had to stop doing, because it was always kind of my go-to, if someone's being like really, really out of line, like whatever, if someone says, oh, you suck, or your show sucks.
Telling you the Oilers made a bad pick in the third round in the draft.
Whatever.
Things they get you really emotional.
But once in a while, if someone gets really out of line, I had this habit of saying, you're a nobody. And like trying to make them feel bad about themselves.
About their lives.
So
sure,
I stopped doing that, especially since the blue check mark came
around. You've gone the opposite. You've said you're a somebody, and that makes them feel good, and then they leave. Right. They leave you alone. You build up their self-esteem at that point.
Sometimes they just say thanks. Anyway,
you say, I'm sure you want it, though. I'm not sure yet. I don't know if I'm going to get the blue check mark.
You would be the guy. You're so anti-establishment.
I could have gone and got it any time. It's not that difficult. There's no vetting process, obviously.
I don't think you could have got it any time.
Yeah. Well, you are nicer.
I think they only give it to the good Twitter accounts.
You're nicer.
That's why
you've
had to wait an extra year.
You've gotten a lot nicer to where you're usually... Now you're encouraging. Now you're like, hey, I know you only have 8 followers, but someday you'll have 10. You're not negative to the people anymore, and I love that. I think that's great.
I'm a man of a people. That's why I stand on the Rogers Center concourse and talk to listeners.
Two other men of the people are Chris Rock and Eric Francis, and we'll hear from both of them next. One of them's in a phone interview, and the other one's just a clip. I'll let you guess who's who. It's Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360.
Go here, there, and everywhere with Jeff Blair. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now more Brady and Walker. On your TV at Sportsnet 360, online at sportsnet.ca/590, and on your radio at Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Eric Francis, in just a little bit. We got a lot to do in a short period of time, in about 12 minutes. We saw this, and this stat's been around for a long time, baseball-wise. By the way, we're watching Tigers-Yankees. Good for the AL East. Tigers up 1-0. Top of inning 6.
Go Tigers.
Stop that. So we saw only 7.8% of players on 2015 opening day rosters would identify themselves as African-American or black. I guess, do you have to identify yourself? I wouldn't think so, but are...
It does. I was shocked because it seems low. But, of course, baseball's become such this international sport, right?
Yeah, way more of an Asian presence, way more of obviously a Latino presence. Latinos are close to 28% now. The highest percentage of blacks was 19% in 1986. And we saw this on HBO Real Sports. Chris Rock tackled this. We had to edit this slightly, which is too bad, but it's not HBO. We realized we can't.
We didn't edit it too much, but Chris Rock is one of our favorites.
Yeah, we can't show unedited scenes from any of The Sopranos, Sex and the City. Did we ask about Taxi Cab? We can't do that either. Can Taxi Cab Confessions? Okay. So here it is. Here's Chris Rock with a good minute on blacks in baseball.
I'm an endangered species, a black baseball fan. Why don't black people like baseball anymore? When I was growing up, we loved baseball. I followed the Mets, and in 1986, we won it all with Doc, Darryl, Mitchell, and my man Mookie. Back then, almost 20% of all major leaguers were African Americans, and I could actually have conversations with other black people about baseball. Hey, what's up, man? You see the game last night? Yeah, it was great. Now if I say to a black person, did you see the Met game last night? They'll say, what the f*** is a Met? Some people say it's money. Baseball is too expensive. But hey, Dominicans play it. This is a tiny third world island, and it dominates baseball. And Cuba's the same.
All right, so we sliced a couple things out of there.
They really took out the best part. Find it on YouTube. It's actually quite funny.
There's obviously something to it.
Shocker, when they take out the funny parts, it's really not that funny.
It's a little dry, but it's meant to be. I mean, we both think Chris Rock is brilliant, something we totally agree on. Like play a set of the Air Canada Center, and I'll fight people for tickets. Yeah. We'd love to see that. Or a couple nights at Massey Hall. But isn't that incredible to think about? When we have all these discussions, and a lot of shows do it maybe more vigorously than we do, about hockey and how expensive it is. Now, what I would say about baseball, it's easy to say,
it is expensive.
You just need a glove, you need some cleats, you need to buy an aluminum bat.
Yeah, to play at the park.
An aluminum bat is cheaper than your regular Easton Synergy now. It's not that expensive. But if you want to be good at it, you are spending thousands of dollars on travel baseball. You are getting hitting lessons from a coach at $85 an hour. You are doing that, but that does not explain. It's more in the States. It's clearly more about college scholarships. It's about chasing football, chasing basketball. You can become a star faster. If you are an exceptional athlete, what's in it for LeBron James is too tall, but what's in it for LeBron James to play baseball when he knows what he wants to do and he knows what he's going to do? What's in it for him to play when he's 13, 14 years old, and you're riding buses probably until, like, the guys like Devin Travis are almost the exceptions, yet he still spent 4 years in the minor leagues.
Yeah, but also, I mean, yes, there are some guys that are very elite at different sports and have to make up their mind at some point. But I think it's more so than, like, there's not some 12-year-old kid saying, why, let's weigh the professional aspects of all. You play the sport you love. Right,
you do, but you're also watching less. You are, like, I find there's a really smart, high learning curve younger group of baseball fans, but I don't know if we'll have that 10 years from now. You're just in your 30s. I think your baseball stuff is really smart, and that's why we like talking it together. There are people who are 10 years younger than you that you worry about, and you go, are they watching a lot? Do they have the patience to sit there? You know what kids are like. You know what teenagers are like. And there, yeah, it's not, idiots. And there's way more stuff on TV also. Like, there was nothing else on in the summer except baseball when I was a kid. We got 10 channels, and at times 3 baseball games would be on. Now there's 200 channels and only 15 games a night. So that factors in.
But if you were a kid and you loved the 4-hour baseball game, you were a rarity. Baseball is one of those things.
Yeah.
It's like, baseball's like scotch, right? Like what 17-year-old high school partier likes to drink scotch. It's, you get older and you grow to appreciate different things.
I think
you get older and you appreciate the pace of it.
No, I think there's something to that, but it was my favorite sport from age 5 through 13, and I don't know how many 5-year-olds.
But you're a rarity. That's not a sign of the times. I think you grew up in a baseball type of family.
Yeah.
So the Calgary Flames.
Let's go out to the baseball hotbed of Calgary, Alberta
now.
Let's do that.
Chris Rietsma. And the Calgary, whatever he was.
The Cannons? Yeah. Are they still the Cannons?
So the Calgary Flames can advance to the second round of the postseason for
now
the
you're
first
talking
time
crazy.
Since 2004 tonight. Incredible. Eric Francis, our good buddy, joins us. Is tonight the night? Games 3 and 4. Eric, the Canucks just looked done. They looked overmatched. Is there something left in that tank, or is this just inevitable now?
Well, first of all, I'm older, and I still don't like scotch or baseball, so I just want to make that clear.
Yeah, incredible. But you like hockey and stampedes. That's about it.
And shirts.
Rum. Anyway,
you are, yeah.
This series, it's one of those series where you have to kind of remind yourself, when you're watching playoff hockey, like the wild mood swings, like if you watch, anyone's watched this series closely, after game one, you're like, wow, it was a 50-50 proposition. Both teams were in it. After game two, you're like, wow. This Vancouver Canucks team is, maybe they are as good as they kind of used to be, and their veteran savvy will carry them through. Then games 3 and 4, the Flames absolutely wipe the floor with them. So the tendency and the belief in Calgary certainly is that this game is a foregone conclusion, but they are playing in Vancouver. I know they haven't won many games in playoffs here in Vancouver in a long time, but I think there's an overwhelming sense that the Flames are going to wrap this series up tonight here in Vancouver. But a lot of people in Calgary, they're kind of hoping for a game 6. So that we can really get that red mile started, have 20,000 people march down to 17th Avenue and really get this party started.
I go back and forth, and I don't want to take any credit away from the Calgary Flames because they've been really good for a long time now, even to get into this position. But out of all the series that could end,
you talk about how well the one team's playing. But for me, I wonder if the Flames go on to play Anaheim in the next round, if we're in for a bit of a surprise with this Flames team not performing, only to the sense, because I just think Vancouver has looked so bad. Like, I'm stunned at how even their good players, like Kevin Bieksa, I've always liked Kevin Bieksa. He's getting run out of the rink.
Yeah, you're right. And there's a lot of people who are here who think Bieksa's hurt and they shouldn't be exposing him. But, you know, he's the kind of guy who would play no matter how hurt he was. I agree with you. You know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, if the Flames move on to the next round and they play Anaheim, who's obviously playing great hockey right now. Or are they playing great hockey? Did the Jets just really implode?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, or did the Vancouver Canucks just really implode last couple of games? I don't know. It's always that combination of, you know, one team making the other team look a little worse than they probably are and vice versa. So that's probably the case here.
I just go back and forth. I don't know if I think smart hockey fans in Calgary would think the same thing. I don't know if the Calgary Flames are just unbeatable right now, like in 2004, or if Vancouver is just awful.
I wonder the same thing, because this magical season that the Flames have had, and there's certainly a bleep in this locker room like that. Nobody can beat them, and you wonder if it's somewhat accurate, just the way they're playing. And the one thing that's really interesting about the Flames and about this playoffs is, you know, they were pretty good this year to get into the playoffs. They had to go on a real good run down the stretch. They hung with a lot of the big boys. But it's like they've got two brand new players on their team, and Sam Bennett, who literally is new, but has got the city on fire, like literally a household name in Calgary,
yeah,
the biggest hero in Calgary right now. And the other name is Michael Ferland, and that name would mean nothing to anybody out east. But here's a guy, 215 pounds, he's throwing his weight around, and it's not easy to just run around like an idiot and hit everything that moves. There's a real art to hitting guys. He's doing it as well as I've seen anyone do it in the last 10 years in the National Hockey League. Just tune in and watch Michael Ferland. He had 9 hits the other night. This is a kid who just like 5-6 games ago, a switch went off and he just got it. He just figured out how to be an NHLer. He's got the confidence now. And I got to tell you, he could be our mayor in Calgary right now. So those two guys are brand new on the scene. So not only were they good down the stretch, they got two new players that are leading the charge.
I weirdly think Saturday could be really fun. I want to see the series get extended. We all like long series. But I bring it up more for... My recollection of 04 is there were really – Vancouver was the home team. Vancouver wins that Game 6 in triple overtime at the Saddle Dome. So lots of chances to wrap it up. They didn't do it. Every Calgary fan thinks, oh, we're in trouble. We got to go to GM Place for Game 7. Then they're winning with 6 seconds left and Matt Cook ties it. Then it's like, oh, there, that was our chance. And then they actually do win in overtime. So they didn't – but they felt unbeatable after that, the Detroit series, the San Jose series. It takes doing that. I just think it'll be a really nervous feeling – the first moments of Game 6 Saturday if Vancouver gets this done tonight.
Yeah, absolutely, because then the pressure's all on Calgary,
yes,
to win at home, or else they're going back to Vancouver. And, you know, it's kind of history in Calgary. People are well aware. The last 3 times these teams have played, it's always gone to Game 7, and it's always gone to overtime of Game 7.
Right.
And the last time the Flames had a 3-1 series lead in the playoffs, 1994, and they ended up blowing that.
To Vancouver.
Vancouver yeah. Came back, won 3 straight overtime games again, including Pavel Bure's very famous goal here,
yeah,
out west. So, you know, I don't think anyone in Calgary's taking it for granted. I'm at their practice right now here in Vancouver. They're really light. There's a lot of hooting and hollering. And, you know, but I think they know that they really need to and want to win this game. Plus, also, this is a team that leads the league in block shots, and they did all year. They could really use 3 or 4 years, days off to kind of, you know, heal themselves.
Well, is there more hooting or hollering, or an equal amount of both?
Well, in Calgary, we get real used to it during the Stampede, so it's kind of a delicious combination.
Right, okay. Thanks, Eric. We'll talk to you soon.
Cheers, boys.
That's Eric Francis. Yes, game number 5. The Flames can wrap it up late tonight. So if you are watching our show today in Vancouver, so right now it's just before noon Vancouver time.
Good job. That was pretty good of you.
Tough tickets
minus
to get.
Three.
So, but we know how to get you a pair of tickets for tonight. So coming up in Vancouver, it's Sportsnet's Find the Puck scavenger hunt, giving you the chance to win Stanley Cup playoff tickets. It'll be in Vancouver this afternoon. So they have 40 pucks hidden in Kitsilano Beach, Vancouver today between 4 and 6 p.m. BC time. All you have to do is get out to the beach and find one of those hidden pucks. Now, 39 pucks, you will get a Sportsnet prize pack, like you can see if you're watching on Sportsnet 360 today. this bag right in front of us with some goodies inside. One puck. It's a silver puck. You will win tickets to the Canucks and
it's
Flames.
It's so
tonight.
Full of NHL goodies. Like, we had help lifting it in here. I can't even, like, we're not
you're also
strong.
You're also very weak, though.
Very fragile.
So there you go. For our viewers in Vancouver today, we'll do our best to get you tickets. There you go.
3 o'clock hour next. And it's 8 degrees with light rain. So take a slicker.
Oh, it's raining in Vancouver.
Yeah, sorry to hear that. Yeah, a rough life out there. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360.